everyone, welcome back to this year's final episode of the Support Ops Hangout. We're going to be back next year, but this is the final one for this year, for ending 2014. It's going to be really great because we've got two of our regulars back, as well as a fantastic special guest. So let's go ahead and meet everybody. First, Carolyn from Buffer. How is things in Bufferland?
Things in Bufferland are wonderful. I don't know what else to say. It's been raining in San Francisco, which is fantastic news because we're in a drought. So that's good.
Yeah, storm of the century or decade or hella storm, or I forget all the hashtags that y'all created for this thing.
Stormpocalypse. Yeah, I think some other areas did get hit pretty hard, but it just like lightly rained in San Francisco, at least in SoMa.
Oh, and then next up, we've got Jeff from over at Wistia. How are you?
I'm good, Chase. It stinks in my apartment right now because my dog got into some treats and it smells horrible. Other than that, I am just great.
And this is why we have an audio and visual part, but not an actual smell thing to this whole show.
Right, smell.
Smell-o-vision is coming in 2015.
Is he ill? Is that why it smells?
He's a kind of ill, yeah. I'll tell you guys later about the time that he got into a whole thing of fish oil tablets.
Wow. And on that note, our special guest for this week. Oh, that's a great segue right there. But our special guest, Bill Bounds, he used to be over at MailChimp, served as the director of support there. And actually, you know, MailChimp grew just, well, the support team anyways, grew dramatically while he was there, from 5 people in the beginning all the way up to 140 when he left. And then he left to start his own consulting firm, Bill Bounds Consulting, which you can find at billbounds.com. So I'm plugging how many times I can say the word Bill and Bounds in the same intro.
Yes.
So how are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Chase. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So for this show, we're going to be looking at everyone's favorite topic of the year and a fun one to end the in this season on. We're going to be talking about hiring, just some kind of loose end things that we hadn't covered in our previous two shows. So if you haven't listened to those yet, check out the show notes. I'll make sure to put links to both of those in there so you can kind of hear some of our previous thoughts on hiring. But we're basically, like I said, we're going to tie up some of the loose ends for everything and leave this entire season kind of neatly packaged as a early holiday Christmas gift to you. So let's start, you know, let's give Bill the kind of first stab at this one. Let's just throw him in trial by fire. So Bill, you know, we talked about the team grew from 5 people to 140 by the time you left. So I'm guessing along the way, interviews happened. And out of all those interviews that you had to do to hire on these new people, what's some of your favorite interview questions that you came across?
Yeah, I had lots of practice at refining whatever these questions are. And everyone kind of has to find their own style. But the one that I really landed on that I like a lot is asking somebody what they do for fun. And that's a little strange just on the surface, because if you leave it at the surface, then it doesn't really tell you much. But if you ask that question and you really dig in, really can tell you a lot about a person. So the example I like to give is, you know, if someone says, yeah, hey, I like baking and I like to make cupcakes or something. Well, that's okay. But if someone says, hey, yeah, I like to bake and I throw a party once a month with my friends, so I have an excuse to try new recipes and force myself to push it, you start to get a sense that that person is really passionate about what they're doing. So it really gives you an opportunity to let someone talk about themselves, which typically puts them at ease. And, if you dig into it, you get to see kind of what makes that person tick and what they hold valuable. Really good example that I had once was, some guy said, yeah, hey, I like books. I like to read. And I kept pushing him on it because I thought, oh, hey, maybe this guy's, you know, intellectual or whatever. And when we boil down to it, after maybe 5 minutes of conversations about books on his shelf, all he really cared about was having the classics on his shelf so when people showed up to his house, it looked like he was well-read. So that's kind of, you know, if you just let it be a surface-level question, it doesn't tell you much. But if you dig in, you can really find out a lot about a person and what makes them tick.
I just don't even know how to respond to somebody that just has classics on the bookshelf to look smart. Like, why would you do that?
Yeah,
There's so many better uses of money.
I kind of couldn't believe that's what he was telling me after we drove down that far. But you know, so it goes.
So what's been your favorite kind of, what's been your favorite story that you've gotten from using that question?
Favorite story from using that question. You know, I'm not really sure. People, I think what I like the most is just when people actually really care about something, the way they light up. It kind of almost doesn't matter what they talk about at that point. But if someone's like, oh, hey, yeah, I love board games, or I love fencing, or I love whatever. It's kind of cool to watch people go through that transition of being really guarded and, you know, sort of at arm's length in an interview to, oh, we're talking about stuff I like? Cool, here we go.
Yes, yeah, so over to Carolyn with Buffer. You know, Buffer has grown not 5 to 140, but, you know, you've added a few happiness arrows along the way. So what's been one of your kind of go-to questions to kind of fill out a potential candidate for that spot?
Yeah, I've hired the happiness heroes on board now. I've also been lucky enough to interview a lot of the people who've come on board the other roles too. So I have two for this one, because the first one's kind of a cop-out, but it's actually my favorite question. I actually really like Tell Me About Yourself. And I know it's like the most feared and horrifying question, except maybe What Are Your Weaknesses? It's second as the most feared to What Are Your Weaknesses? But I really love it because... similar to what Bill just said, like, you get a really good sense of people. Like, if they're like, well, I was born in like Michigan, and like now I like, you just get kind of how introspective they are and what's about their life and where they're going and what they want, versus if they can actually tell you how they got to this point and why they're excited about being at this point. So I really like that question, even though I know it's mean. And My second one is kind of about, it's about our values. So we have 10 very public values. And I usually ask people like which value they feel the most excited about. Cause like if they say, oh, I love them all equally, like that's probably not totally, that probably means they haven't thought a ton about it. Right. And then I ask them also to come up with the value that either is missing or they would remove, or just the one that's existing that they feel a little bit like nervous about. And same thing, if they feel like, oh, well, no, they're all perfect, then it probably means they haven't put a ton of thought into it. But I think it's really, it's an insight not only into the person, but also kind of how much they've researched and thought about how they will fit in with you. You know, I'm sure that if we did this exercise with existing people, everyone would have an answer for which one they're the most like about, and probably there would even be some that are missing. So yeah, I think it serves well if you actually have an answer for those, as opposed to being like, oh, hold, like, it's fine if people pull them up, but then usually they're like, oh yeah, that's right, I was thinking about this one, as opposed to just being like, oh nope, they're all great. I like those too.
Oh yeah, so we'll give you a pass on the first one being a cop out, because just kind of is. But the second one, I like that one. I like kind of finding out how much somebody has actually researched into your company, rather than just been like, hey, I'm going to send out like 100 cover letters and see what happens. So Jeff, with Wistia, you know, you're Wistia's actually in the process of hiring a new customer champion, which has got to be exciting. So what's some of the questions you got in your back pocket?
So funny story before I dive into this. I went and visited Bill a few months back when he was still at MailChimp. And while I was there, I had to take a interview over the phone from Bill's office. And suffice it to say, after the interview, I got the feedback from him that he and I have very different styles. I think there are the two ways that I've heard of people starting out is either you come in and you're a perfect 10, and then I start to ask you questions and I start to find your cracks and the things that maybe you didn't think a lot about, or the reasons why you might not be a great fit. Or you come in and there's a really good chance that I don't like you, and then what you're proving to me is that I should really love you. And I think because a person tends to go from one to the other based on their personal attributes, and I tend to be one of the second ones, and Bill tends to be the first one. So I tend to come at people pretty hot and heavy with why questions right off the bat. That's just like the question that's the most important to me is why do you want to be here and why should we hire you? And I'm sure everybody else would agree that the four companies that we represent are pretty attractive to work at. And there are a number of people that when they're looking for a job, they're like, oh, hey, wow, like Buffer's hiring. I mean, that sounds pretty sweet. Like I'd be like really well known on Twitter if I got a job there. I'll just apply there, whatever. And
instantly get like 10,000 new Twitter followers, like off.
Yeah, exactly. And we have a lot of people who apply and they're like, you know, it just seems like a really great culture. Like you guys seem to have a lot of fun. And I appreciate that. But the reason why we get to have so much fun is because we work incredibly hard and everyone who's there is there for a fairly specific reason for doing great work. So I start with a lot of why questions. Maybe not necessarily so black and white as like, why should we hire you? But, you know, something like we're talking to a lot of different people and it's helpful for me to keep everybody straight. So what's the thing about you that makes you stand out from all these other jabrons? And sometimes people have answers to that and sometimes they don't. And then I always close with, what questions do you have for me or for us? Because one of our key attributes is curiosity, and someone who is extremely curious will come in and ask questions about the part of the business that I'm working on, other parts of the business, other people, other projects that they've heard about related to Wistia, how we're going to stay in business. Like they're just interested in all of these things, and they ask their questions in this way that tells me, yeah, that person's going to fit in really well with the way that they just delivered that question. A lot of other people might say something like, no, I don't really have any questions. Like, I actually have to get to this other interview. And you're like, okay, cool. Well, it's great to meet you. Then we just try to figure out how to never get that person in the building again. So those are the two most important categories of questions for me. And then I think everything else is mostly based on the candidate. I try to do a little bit of research and then, like Bill said, get them talking about stuff that is really valuable to them and you will get them excited. And then it's easier to transition them into, you know, once they're open, like Bill said, it's easier to transition them to talking about the role. What I don't think Bill said, or maybe I missed it because I was dealing with Sherman eating another milk bone, was that he lulls them into a false sense of security and then boom, just like hits them with a super tough question. So
I do.
He does. See, got him.
I do that. Yeah.
So what's up with that?
Well, so I feel like this is important, particularly when you're talking about customer support. You know, you can know a product forwards and backwards, but you could have a conversation about one thing and then have it change to something totally different really quickly. And, you know, an interview is really just someone telling their story. And so you get them comfortable, you get them talking about stuff they're, you know, that they're happy with. And yeah, Jeff's right. I typically ask like maybe three total crisis questions in the middle of them being comfortable. And it'll be something like I've found in their resume that, you know, is diametrically opposed to doing support. And if you have that experience, why would you want to be doing support? And, you know, people have to be able to move comfortably in that conversation between, you know, topic A and topic B. And this is a way to test that sharpness, I think. And it's funny because, you know, you can't fault someone for being caught off guard by that, right? Like if someone kind of stumbles for a couple seconds, that's natural. But if they can then put together a coherent story and move forward and come up with a good answer, then they're probably the sharp person you want. If they kind of stumble and fumble the whole time, then odds are when they're on a chat with somebody, they'll probably do the same thing.
I think one thing that you just said, Bill, and just to, I don't know, dive into it a little bit is that The great interviews I've had when I ask a really tough question, the person kind of stops for a second and they do their thinking thing. And everyone thinks a little bit differently, but the great ones are like, or like, let me think about that for a second. And they kind of sit back and they think about it. And then they'll say things like, you know, I think that I might try to do it this way, but I'm really not sure because I've never done it before. And that they can see that as being totally okay. They see that as being completely okay to say, well, you know, we'll learn it together. And that's like one of our core beliefs as a customer happiness team, is that it's okay to learn it together. And to say, I don't know from the start. So I think that's what you were getting at when you say that, like, I ask them a tough question and they might stumble for a second, but they actually think about it for a second rather than just yammering their way through a 30-minute response like I would.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And then, you know, if you only ask questions that are predictable and can be rehearsed, you're just going to get rehearsed answers the whole time. So.
Yeah, that's one of those, one of my favorite questions that I've used before. And you can throw it on the application that they do or in person too, was, you know, tell me what your favorite thing is and how I would go about buying that from you. And then it became really popular and people started having like canned prepared answers for it. So it's like, now you got to drop it and move on to another question, which is sad. That was such a good one. So one question to kind of throw out to anybody that wants to pick it up, you know, all three of us, four of us, I guess I should count myself when I say us. So all four of us, whenever we do have an opening, you know, so like Jeff mentioned, you know, we kind of get more than enough applications to kind of start picking through, you know, the last number I remember Carolyn talking about with Buffer, it was like you had 300 or 400 different applications for a spot. Basecamp gets hundreds of applications for a spot. So where do you start? Like, how do you even handle getting through that many applications to find anyone?
I'll go, cause we're doing it right now. But I definitely want to, if Bill thinks he's not going to answer this one, he's crazy. So I was just listening to, the Dave Ramsey podcast. I don't know if you guys know this Entree Leadership thing, and they were talking about how they do 5 or 6 rounds of interviews, not like steps in their application process, but interviews. And I found that to just feel in my bones like an incredible waste of time, both for the candidate and for yourself, especially if you have hundreds and hundreds of people applying for jobs. So we started out by thinking, well, we don't have that kind of time to spend with each candidate. How can we evaluate some of the most important skills or attributes that we'd be looking for without requiring in-person interviews every time? So our resume submission, and Carolyn, I know, can speak to this as well, because they do it at Buffer, is not just, hey, send your resume over here and then we'll get back to you, right? We have a bunch of questions on there that actually require some thought and a little bit of longer form writing. And it's really, really easy to screen people out when they submit their resume and they put like not applicable or like 2-word answers in some of the questions that they submit. But some of the best ones, they've found a way to write concisely and clearly, and they've actually thought through the answer before they started writing. It's just, it's night and day. So we have a bunch of other steps, but we can go into those later. But I think that what I would say is when you're totally inundated, that you're probably making the bar a little bit too low. And it's really hard to differentiate candidates from there.
Carolyn, you were nodding your head along to all that. Is that something that Buffer does too?
Yeah. I'll preface my answer by saying that I was warned recently, or warned is too strong a word. I was informed that there's a blog post that's about to be published about how I do not get back to people promptly enough and the application experience at Buffer is very negative. So you can take everything that I say with a grain of salt.
it's not like you've, you know, you've only hired maybe like one other person. So everything you say just.
Well, that's all true, actually, unfortunately. So, yeah, the person writing that blog post is right. We just do as fast as we can on the inundated thing. And yes, we just recently did make the change that Jeff said, that we used to have, like, send us your ideas for being the next happiness hero. And that's a little hard even for people who do feel really enthusiastic and are willing to take the time and do have thoughtful answers to the types of questions that we might ask. So we made it a lot more elaborate. We asked them to read books before they apply. We asked them to answer hypothetical customer examples. You know, we asked them to give examples of when they've been the customer, so that we can kind of see how they write on that side as well. Like, we added a lot. And that's made it significantly a better experience, hopefully for the candidates and for us, because we get only much more sort of interested and willing and qualified candidates. Now, there was something else he said that I wanted to answer, and I have lost it. But I remember we do 4 or 5 rounds of interviews, but they're on video chat, so it's maybe not as much of an investment, but we do that. And what we sometimes find is that people who are just looking for a job get a different job in between versus the ones who were really want a job at Buffer stick it out. So that's a valuable thing for us. I agree that in-person interviews 4 or 5 is a lot.
So with those 4 or 5, you know, why that many? Does it just take that long to kind of fill somebody out? Are you cycling through like different people with each interview? Like, why that many?
Yeah, different people with each interview for sure. Yeah. We usually do like, I don't know that we've ever gotten to 5. It's usually 3 or 4, but it's just usually the first interview is much more about the role, and then we have a second interview devoted entirely to the culture conversation and culture fit. So for the hero role, I do the sort of the role stuff. And then for the other applicants, if I'm the right person for it, the couple of us cycle through, but sometimes I get to do the culture role, and the culture interview, which is super fun because you get to just learn so much about that person. People do it differently. Like Jeff said, some people come in and are like, okay, sell me. And like, some people are like, I think Leo, for example, is really, I would imagine, quite intimidating to interview with, whereas like, I don't think I am. And he and I very often get very different versions of the same person. So that's really useful to talk through. I don't know if it's ideal, but it seems to work for us.
I wanted to say one thing before we put Bill on the hot seat, which is that if Wistia was nearly as visible of a company as Buffer is when I was ridiculously horrible at hiring, there would have been many, many blog posts written about how god awful, and I still am. But the thing that I did was I handed off the first round of evaluations, and that has made all the difference because I am not the sticking point anymore, and I think that's really helpful. I wanted to give I just think whoever's writing a critical blog post, you're probably right, but cut Carolyn some slack.
Thanks. And yeah, I mean, she asked me for my answer to it. And I agreed that she was right, which is, you know, never fun. But I also said like, yeah, we kind of committed to this by deciding that we weren't going to hire someone for hiring. Like, we decided that it was going to be the people who also do a lot of other stuff, most specifically leading their team and helping their customers. And like, hiring honestly comes after those two things. For the most, I mean, not, you know, maybe on any specific given week or something, but I should be more on top of it. Absolutely.
We should really revisit that. Why you didn't hire someone for hiring. That seems kind of crazy. We don't have to revisit it right this minute. If it wasn't like a Carolyn only decision, because I really, really want to grill Bill, but I think that sounds kind of
nice. I want to hear Bill also, but I would love to have that conversation, and we can have it in a hangout on air if Chase will put in the show notes.
Perfecto.
So without further ado, Bill, how did you, because MailChimp had to have gotten just an ungodly amount of applications. Like, how do you weed through those?
Yeah. So first off, thanks for the build up and pressure, Jeff. So I actually think this is a really great question because it's one of those that you can't just say, hey, here's the one answer to. Because first off, you're talking about how do you figure out how to weed through all of the different applications you get. And early on, that's a challenge because you just haven't hired enough people to know. When your whole company is 60 people, it's really challenging to know exactly what works for you and exactly what doesn't. And, you know, if your team is maybe 10 people in support or something, you're not as willing to bring new people on, people that don't fit the mold or the culture that you have. So that's a really challenging thing to go through and is one of those things that just takes time and experience to say, okay, this is the thing that people have to do for us to consider the resume. For us, one of the really easy things to settle on was, hey, if you're writing a cover letter, I'm not looking at anything else. Because we're doing email support in addition to chat support when I was at MailChimp. And yeah, hey, that means you've got to write, and I need to see how you write. And if you're not doing that, never mind. So you come up with a few easy things to cross off the list, and that gets you that structure. But the other reason I really like this question, and Jeff kind of hinted at it, is, you know, this is a resource question. And ultimately, your answer is to give more resource to hiring. And I like that because it becomes the manager's problem. It becomes the leader of that team's problem. And it forces you to do one of two things, right? You can either offload some of your tasks to someone else so that you can focus on the hiring piece or the review piece, or it forces you to train someone else to actually read those resumes and go through them and filter them down so you can just make a decision. Which I think is what Jeff was saying happened at Wistia. But that's a perfect problem for a manager to have because it forces them to learn how to be more of a manager, right? Like, forces you to learn how to put responsibility on other people and be more comfortable with sort of spreading that around. Because as your team grows, and really the ideal answer is that you train someone else, because as your team grows, you're only going to get more and more, right? You're only going to have to do it more, and it's going to compound over time. So yeah, I love that question because it pulls so many different things in. It's culture, it's process, and it's how are you developing people as a leader?
Bill is such a mentor to me, and it's so obvious. I'm so glad that he's on the show today. This is incredible. One story that he probably won't tell you, but I just want to tell you real quick, is MailChimp, like we said, is like an extremely visible company. They put up a job listing and they probably get plenty of applicants, which means that when you have plenty of applicants, one thing you could do is just look at every resume, see what colleges they graduated from, right? And say like, oh, if you graduated from Georgia Tech, you're in. If you graduated from, I'm not sure, Atlanta Community College, you're out. And I was meeting some of the folks on Bill's team, and there was this great guy that he introduced me to, a ton of energy, super friendly. And we were, you know, we said hello and this guy walks away and Bill was like, I found that guy because I was getting my oil changed on my car. And this guy was just providing like way over the top, incredible service. And I offered him a job and he took it. And I think it just speaks to the fact that there are many different ways that we can address this problem that we're talking about, right? Being inundated with resumes, there are so many different ways to solve that problem. But probably the worst way to solve it is to say, like, we're going to go on titles and different prizes that you've won and these signifiers that actually have nothing to do with the support that that person will provide to your customers. I think that's just a great shining example or a model of a company that decided to do the right thing rather than the easy thing.
So I think there's one other element to that story, if you're bringing it up, embarrassing me on air. You know, when you're still a really small team, it's much more difficult to say, you know, hey, this is the pattern that worked for us, but we're going to go with someone way over here, right? But as your team grows beyond 10, beyond 20, whatever, you have to start adding in more diversity of background and diversity of experience and ability, because, you know, you wouldn't hire 10 Jeffs to do the same job, right? Like over and over and over, like eventually you would just come to the same answers every time. So you need those different backgrounds, those different experiences, those different skill sets to be able to round out your team. You're going to have people that specialize in all kinds of different ways. And so if you narrow based on something like what college did you go to or something like that, you never get that diversity.
Yeah, and there's even questions that do that. You know, we're talking about like specific biographical information here, but what I run across a lot of times is a question that basically sums up with, you know, if you get hired, what kind of projects, what kind of work are you going to be doing for a company? And if they had asked me that when I was getting hired with Basecamp, I would have had no idea because I was a restaurant background, food service background, and public school teacher background. Like, I couldn't tell you anything that I would have done as a support person working for Basecamp until I had been in the job for a while. So, you know, not only should you not be paying attention that much to where people are graduating college and stuff like that, you know, think about that kind of stuff when it comes to your questions too, because it, like I said, I would have had no idea how to answer something like that. And I've turned out to be a pretty decent hire, I think, personally, just me. So that's kind of looping back just a little bit. That's so interesting, Bill, that you hired somebody from your oil change place.
It was actually the tag office. It was at the DMV.
Oh. Well, if you get good service at the DMV, you just need to hire whoever that was right away.
Yeah,
it turns out I made it up.
Oh, the details weren't important. But it does bring up a good question. Like, yeah, so for the times where you weren't weeding through applications, you know, what kind of places would you go to look at, you know, recruiting people, noticing people that could do well for your team? Like, is it okay? And we'll go back to Bill on this one. Is, you know, could you build out a team just looking at, you know, who helped me out with really great service at the DMV?
I think that would be hard, especially if you had genuine hiring need, right? Because that's kind of an opportunistic thing to do. And I had the luxury of having the problem of never having enough people in support. So it kind of opens up the door to doing something like that. So yeah, you'd need to be a little more targeted than that. I think when people start, when companies start, they kind of go based on their own popularity and they just have a jobs page and mm-hmm. and go from there. But at some point that's not enough anymore. So I think the real obvious first place to look is really Facebook, which is kind of not something that came immediately to mind for me when we were doing it. But they offer some really awesome options for targeting ads very specifically. So you can target by location and radius of location and then say, okay, if you're hiring for Buffer, you say, okay, well, you know, just in this area, 50-mile radius and only people that have liked Buffer. And, you know, more than just, you know, getting those people that saw the ad, we got people that told their friends that they had seen the ad and that's who was applying. Because they already like the company, they're interested, and oh, hey, they know someone that might be a good fit who's looking for a job. That was a really good like first place for us to go that expanded things for us.
Yeah, I would have never thought of using Facebook for that. That's kind of cool. So Jeff and Carolyn, any other cool little tricks like that for getting the word out about your job opening?
I think I mentioned this one in the past, but the one that that just changed our experience completely was within our own app. Now, we may be a little bit unique in that way because we only hire people who've used the app personally or for work for at least a few months. So we love it when people say, oh, I have a friend who might be a good fit. But then what we end up doing is saying to the friend, like, we really like you. Use Buffer for 3 months and come back and talk to us. So which is awesome to start building that pipeline for 3 months down the road. But what we found really valuable was writing right within the web version of our app. We changed the logo from just the word Buffer to like Buffer is hiring. And if you click that, it'll bring you to the jobs page. So it's people who are already in there who know the product and who are logged in and who have experience. I've said that before. So watchers of this podcast, sorry, you've had heard that a few times. But that was really an amazing change for us in terms of getting people who had experience with the product as opposed to like Hacker News jobs thing and like other places.
Yeah, and for those of you that haven't seen that before, I'll put a image in the show notes that'll kind of show you what their logo looks like. Because I was the same way. Like when I saw it, I was like, that is genius. That's such a smart move.
Can't remember.
I got to wonder. I gotta wonder if there aren't examples of people getting a little bit put off by that, or I would be worried about that for us, because we work on a little bit, our app is a little bit more team-based, where I think Buffer is a little, for the most part, like a one-to-one, like a single person has their login and they use it, only because it, like if we were marketing jobs to other employees of our customers, right? Our customers like, wait, so I'm paying you guys and then you're turning around and marketing to my employees to try to get them to leave my company. What the heck is wrong with you people? But I really have no idea. We haven't tried it yet, but that would just be my read on that. What the thing I was going to say is, because I think Bill's totally right that your jobs page can be really good, but also is, you know, extremely limiting. People aren't just wandering around looking at jobs pages. But we're thinking about how we can make our jobs page better. Obviously, that's like our number one priority right now. That was a joke.
I was like, wow.
Part of the thing, we are actually thinking about that. But part of our thinking is also we could make something that could be shared more widely than our jobs page. And of course, a video comes to mind. So I just laid some sweet, sweet voiceover for a video this evening that I think is going to go live shortly for this customer champion listing. And I bet it's going to be so, so good because my guys Olivier and Trevor are working on it. And I bet it's going to be awesome.
Oh, please send me that video as soon as it happens, because I want to hear your sweet, sweet voiceover.
Oh, you'll see it. You'll definitely hear it. I'm probably going to get cut from the final version if they really want it to be good, but you know, you never know.
The sweet melodic tones of Jeff Vincent. Oh, all right. So let's kind of finish things up here a bit before we jump into the shout outs and things like that. So you've done your recruiting, you've spread the word around about your jobs. You've taken those applications and weeded them down as far as you can. How do you get from that kind of initial calling, that initial like run through and kind of weeding out of all those applications? How do you get from that hand selected group down even further to like the top two or three candidates? Like, what's your tricks for getting to those final two or three, to pick from? Let's go with Jeff on that one.
Oof.
Do you need time? Do I need to?
No. I'm just trying to think of how to package it so I don't take forever, because this is a really tough question. And Bill
knows. 60 seconds, go.
I struggle with this. well, this is where doing a limited number of interviews can be really useful, because we try to put not a ton of pressure, but when someone leaves after an interview and we close the door and we wave goodbye to them, you turn around and it's like, are we a thumbs up or are we a thumbs down on that person? And there is no middle ground. And if we're a thumbs down on that person, then for the most part, we're probably not going to interview them again, right? We'll certainly talk about it for a bit longer. But if you leave yourself the trap door of like, well, you know, I'm just really not sure, maybe we should just interview them again, then you probably will for everyone, because hiring is very scary, and you always are worried that you're going to get it wrong. So one great way to shoot yourself in the foot in terms of bringing it down from, you know, 10 great people to two is to try to do two or three interviews with each of those 10 people. That's like a good way to just sink like a month of your life. Right. So the thing that I've probably done the most in this case is to have one interview with that person where all I'm thinking about is this person the person? And honestly, we've never had a case where we've had 10 great people who are all the person. There's a difference between, I really like this person, I think that they're, you know, really nice and smart, and this person would really change the team for the better. So I guess that's the only advice that I could really give in 60 seconds.
All right, Carolyn, take your 60 seconds or however long you want. We'll give you a little bit more time. how do you get to that top two or three to pick from?
Yeah. So, well, we only do interviews with a few people. A few Buffer people. We get thoughts from everyone else, or not everyone, but anybody who feels like jumping in. And Yeah, you have to kind of strengthen that muscle of like, oh, there was this just this one sentence that turned me off a little bit. And instead of, you have to just learn, and it takes practice to not go like, but like that's really great and I liked everything else. Like you have to sort of be disciplined about that. So that's kind of step one. And I was just going to agree with Jeff's comment about and the way we do this is, yeah, I agree that there is no middle ground because middle ground is no, right? Like after three people interview that person, we all get together. And anyone at any point can just be like, it wasn't great. I'm not passing them on. So they don't necessarily automatically get all three, but if they get through all three, we all sit around and talk. And yeah, it's like, obviously by the time they've had three interviews, the answer to, do you like them? Are they smart? Is this person interesting? Is all yes. And the, what kind of separates the people who eventually get offers and the people who don't is like, what if we offered this person a job and he or she said no, because he or she was moving on to somewhere, like had accepted a different job, would you feel really disappointed? And if the answer to that is also no, then it's a no. Because if you're kind of like, well, yeah, smart, interesting, funny, like super motivated, focused on self-improvement, like loves transparency, blah, blah, but like, nah, then that's a no. So that's kind of how we do that same thing that Jeff just talked about, is instead of asking the positive questions, kind of ask it in the reverse and see if you are sad to think of not getting them.
Bill, you're going to get the final say for this show topic, for this show, for this season, all that fun stuff. Wow. So, what do you think? Yeah, no pressure, no pressure at all. And tell you what, we'll give you 90 seconds on this one.
It's an honor.
Oh, so how do you get to that final, you know, couple of people you choose from?
Yeah, I think Jeff and Carolyn are right. You know, it's you've got to have the experience over time to know what you're looking for and how to make those decisions. You know, I don't think people naturally do a good job of pushing themselves to find that experience. So if you just kind of always talk for an hour in an interview, maybe next time try only limiting yourself to 45 minutes or something. And if you're seeing that, hey, you're 35 minutes in and you haven't asked the questions you need to ask yet, go ahead and ask them, right? In terms of like how you're making the decision, if you're weighing, you know, three or four people against each other, it kind of goes back to, you know, how comfortable you are with your culture and what your true needs are. Cause you've got to boil down that question to what really matters here. Is it really culture that matters and what you're hiring for? Or is it really a certain skill set that you're looking for, and do they have that? Yes, no. Sometimes it just needs to be that. The thing I would caution there is sometimes it's easy to discount someone because you think they might have a behavior that could be disruptive, right? You say something like, you know, hey, this person's really good, they're qualified, but I think they'll ask a lot of questions in those first couple months, and I don't know if anyone else is really ready to handle that. Well, that could actually be a behavior that's really good for your team to deal with, right? And that person could be bringing a lot of good things by asking those kinds of challenging questions. So make sure whatever that criteria is that you're using to judge isn't sort of a false barrier, right? And, you know, the last thing I guess is just you should be conscious of the fact that as your team grows, you do need that variety in opinion. You know, you need that variety in background, and you're always going to have to push those people that are like, hey, they're really good. We think this other person's good too, but this person's different, and this person, you know, is, we have exactly that same experience three times over. Let's try the new person, right? If that, all of that still doesn't help you make the decision, I'm a really big fan of assigning like a good cop and a bad cop role, where one person is only able to say good things about that person and they have to make the case, and one person is only able to say bad things. And if you can get the good cop to yield and say, no, you're right, we shouldn't hire this person, the bad cop to yield and say, yeah, you're right, we should hire that person, then you've got a good decision on your hands, you know?
I really thought when you said good cop, bad cop, I thought that was in the interview. And I was like, oh, wow.
Can I add something there?
Yeah.
If you've got, my opinion, and again, our situation is a little bit more like yours that you said, where like, you just can always bring on more people. There's enough work to go around and budget. So I recognize this isn't an answer for everybody, but if you've got two people who you're so excited about and the answer to would be devastated if we didn't get them both was yes, then hire them both and they'll figure out ways to keep busy while, you know, I don't know. I think if you've got two really wonderful culture fits who do bring something to the table that you don't already have, just get them on board. Hire them both.
Yeah, I really think that's right. Because, you know, when you're just slightly overhired, even if it's pushing your budget a little bit, when you're slightly overhired, you get people with just enough time to breathe, just enough time to think, just enough time to do extra stuff. So if you can only have 12 people in your team and you got to push and make it 13 because that other person is really great, I think that's a conversation worth having. I think you're right.
No, you got to keep them non-thinking automatons. Just keep them really all day. And that's the last thought for this season. Okay.
Oh, tell you what, listeners, we'll give you the last thought so there's no bias or anything else. Let us know what you thought about all the hiring stuff that we've talked about on this show. And let us know what you thought about the season too. It's kind of a good point. You know, we're taking the next couple of weeks off for the holidays and things. So if there's something that you felt we didn't cover enough in the past season or you want us to tackle for the next season, that kind of thing, let us know. You can hit us up on Twitter. We're at SupportOps there, or send us a message at supportops.co/question. We'll get you right over to us. All that said, that brings us to my favorite part of each and every episode. It's this. I forgot you started doing the psh. Oh, that's great. Oh, we are high tech. We are really high tech. But yeah, it's this week's shout outs. These are the things that are making us happy, so happy. We want to shout them out from the rooftops, the mountaintops to tell you, hey, you should be doing this, buying this, using this, working with this, listening to this, whatever it is. So let's go ahead and just run down the line. Jeff, what's your shout out for this week?
I have two, as usual. I either have zero or two. It's feast or famine. I have two. My first one is a shout out to, I tweeted it this morning, but the Farnham Street blog and their newsletter. It's written by a guy named Shane Parrish. And in his newsletter, he tells you that he puts more than 100 hours into each episode, each week's episode. And I completely believe it after reading this first one. I was exhausted. My brain was literally spent after reading the whole thing, and I had like 10 new articles to read. So I would highly recommend it. It's a lot of stuff around critical thought and a lot of stuff around things to read. So totally recommend that. The other one is a bit more of a personal shout out. I am shouting out my teammate Mercer, who recently received an offer to build a team of her own at Campaign Monitor and has accepted. And I'm thrilled for her. I'm really excited. And I wanted to take to a public forum to just let her and everyone else know that I am have just been super impressed over the last 2 years or so by her hard work. And I'm excited to keep up with what she does next. So you can follow her at Mercenator. She has much more in-depth things to say about customer support than I do.
Yay, Mercer!
Oh, next up, Carolyn, what's your shout-out?
Okay, I have two. My first one is the concept of having 10 Jeffs introduced by Bill earlier. I would like that to happen in my life, so I'm just shouting out. Make sure that thought doesn't die at the previous moment. And my real shout out is for an app called Ship, S-H-Y-P, which we've used at Buffer, and I'm going to use right before I travel, just to like make some of these little tasks easier. And they just come to you. They will wrap, package, whatever it is, put it in a box, and then send it. And you never have to leave your office or your home or and you just pay on the app, and it's $5 plus shipping, which sounds like a lot until you think about how much time you spend standing in line at the post office. So in light of holiday season, that's my shout out.
Y'all get the coolest apps out there.
What?
No one but San Franciscans have that.
Sorry. I warned you that this was going to happen when I moved to San Francisco.
Just jealous, that's all.
Oh, and then Jeff, good grief. I got stuck on the 10 Jeffs thing and was thinking about how cool and possibly terrifying that might be. Bill, what's your shout out?
I only have one, and I'm actually going to repeat one from last week because I don't think Jeff spent enough time on it. 15.5, actually. At the last few months I spent at MailChimp, we implemented it, and it was just really great. It's the whole concept is, you know, it takes 15 minutes to fill out and 5 minutes to read. And, you know, even the reports that I had that I thought I had really great relationships with, the way even their stock questions are formed, or just asking someone to take, you know, that 15 minutes and really be considerate about the problems they're facing or what they think is great or who's doing great work for them or you know, things they think they're going really well or really bad. Even the people that I felt really close to and open with, I got so much more out of those reports than I did the conversations. And it wasn't necessarily the big ticket stuff. It was all those like little things that can snowball and start to be bigger problems. It just made it much easier to talk about all that stuff. Even if it never came up in a face-to-face, you can talk back and forth in it. I just think it's a really great app for encouraging that communication between, you know, managers and reports and stuff like that. It's a great tool. So 15.5 is my shout out.
All right. And my shout out to end the season out. Look, if somebody like emails me and is like, oh, we had no idea you were on like 2 week holiday break. Look, I've said end of the season, like enough. So sorry. Final shout out is just to Chase Livingston, Carolyn and Jeff, because they do a fantastic job week in and week out. With this show, it's one of those where I tell them I get the easy part. I just pick a question, and then they have the tough part of actually having a discussion about it, coming up some good thought-provoking answers to everything. And they do it, like I said, week in and week out. Every Monday, we're here 5:30 doing the show, and we have done it now for 66 episodes, 2 years worth, which is crazy. Crazy. I'll be honest. I thought maybe like 30, 40 episodes out of the show, and then we just kept going and going and going. It's been awesome. So I really can't wait to see what they have in store for all of us next year as far as their awesome answers go and everything else. So make sure to tune in because they're fantastic, and they're going to be fantastic even more so next year. So that's my shout out. Y'all are awesome. All that fun stuff. And that brings us to the end of the season. Like we mentioned, 2 weeks. We're going to be gone so we can celebrate Christmas and the New Year and all that fun stuff. We're all traveling, and it's just a mess to do a show in that kind of situation. So it gives us time off to recharge. Let us know any topics that you want us to cover next week, because it's blank slate. I am out of topics. It's official. Like, I got nothing going into next year. Nothing. So please, supportops.co/question, or hit us up on supportops at supportops with Twitter. Let us know what you want us to talk about next year. From all of us to you, you know, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and we'll see you again next year.